is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud. Operation Warp Speed is the, you're hearing about the coronavirus vaccine, and there's a lot actually with these vaccines. A lot of them are being developed around the world, and there's a race to get that vaccine to the market. On the political front, of course, we have Joe Biden that is, we're just months away from an election here. It's hard to imagine that this thing is going to shift like that, but it will. And he has did a virtual roundtable. Some gaffes came out of that, very fascinating. JCPenney files bankruptcy, and you've seen a lot of those big stores actually are in trouble financially. Many were in trouble before the pandemic, but they're certainly in trouble after the pandemic, without a doubt here. And you see the president released the super-duper missile, the Space Force, is another very interesting story. We will do a deep dive on the rise of National Socialism in America as well. Very interesting two-part series we have coming. Is the American melting pot coming to an end? I will tell you all about that. And the real racism, is it or is it not, exposed in Georgia here. It's a very big program today, my friends. And we have an all-star lineup of fabulous people. Let me start with the top stories and introduce you here to Dr. Ron Martinelli. He's a retired police detective, a forensic criminologist. He's a political analyst and a host here of Talking While Married on the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network. Dennis Santiago is here. He's an American strategist. Dennis focuses on strategic warfare, asymmetric warfare, arms control, global stability. He's a voice and a weekly writer here. Ava Armstrong is a political commentator, radio personality. Ava is a fantastic author. Her books, along with all of our experts and guest books, are on the America Out Loud bookstore. Just go to the navigation bar at AmericaOutLoud.com, and you'll see the bookstore right there, and it is the best of the best in there, and you may help yourself there as you will. I seen a report here just the other day here. The International Monetary Fund, by the way, predicts that it may take until 2023 for the global economy to return to its pre-coronavirus levels. And that does not surprise me, that stat or that number. And it makes sense if you consider what the world has gone through and what's going to happen next. So we're talking about a couple of years yet here, people, which is pretty typical of these kind of pandemic viruses historically. And that'll be no exception here. So one of the big stories is this race now to get this vaccine out. And President Trump announced on Friday Operation Warp Speed. Well, it's a new initiative that is aimed at developing, manufacturing, and distributing a proven coronavirus vaccine. He described the administration's plan as a massive scientific, industrial, and logistical endeavor, unlike anything our country has ever seen since, well, the Manhattan Project of World War II, with the intent to rapidly develop and distribute a vaccine with help from the U.S. military and world-renowned doctors and scientists here. So this is interesting, the way they're pushing this. Let's start off with Dennis Santiago. And Dennis, so with the vaccine here now, he says, we'd love to see if we can do it prior to the end of the year. He said, we think we're going to have some very good results coming out very quickly. So I don't think there's been a time before we've seen such a push to get a vaccine to market. And probably if anybody could do this, this probably would be Donald Trump. But what's your confidence level, one, in the vaccine getting out by the end of the year? And two, that it would be effective, because you've got to have typically that 18 months or better to have the case trials and all.
What's really interesting to me here is that the U.S., and with Trump leading, has basically declared war on this virus in competition with a similar initiative that was launched by Macron and Merkel in Europe. They say they have 22 initiatives going on, but that initiative in Europe is starting to report that it may take them a while. So I think what's happened here is the U.S. is jumping into the breach and saying, let's try to do this faster and better. And what Trump is brought to the table in this instance is not just the medical community. But if he's bringing the defense community in, that means that all of the technology that we understand about how to work the world of germ warfare comes into the fray. And so we've got a double whammy in terms, and I think possibly a strategic advantage over what they're trying to do in terms of vaccine development in other parts of the world. So I'm pretty excited that we may get something out of this.
Yeah, so I'm even hearing reports, Dr. Ron Martinelli of China jumping in here. There, in fact, I seen reports just the other day that they are attempting to do their typical thing and steal it through cyber security measures and breaking through. And they're trying to steal the, well, the secret recipe, if you will, to the vaccine. Isn't that the way it is always with China, it seems? But now you hear about Europe, what Dennis says there, you see China and what we're doing here. There's a race to get there. How confident are you, Dr. Ron, in this vaccine coming to market? And as Dennis just say, without having the usual trials done, because vaccines can be very dangerous if they're not, properly there and ready.
Well, you know, I think we're going to get there. And I think Dennis points out, and you mentioned that it usually takes about 18 months to get a viable vaccine. But if we start expediting the process, as long as we're acting in a reasonable manner, in a safe manner, and using the science, I think we're going to get there. I have a daughter that used to be the federal and state compliance officer for a major pharmaceutical corporation that's mentioned all the time. And she would tell me about the over-bureaucratic process that NIJ goes through and FDA goes through when they take a look at pharmaceuticals. And much of it is unnecessary. So I think the medical team, is seeing that, hey, you know, we can get rid of some of these redundant processes. And I think if we do that, I think we'll get a vaccine a lot quicker than 18 months.
Yeah. Do you, are you confident yourself? I mean, will you take the vaccine?
Oh, sure. I'm, you know me, I'm a, you know, being a medical investigator, I'm also have to deal with with statistics.
Yeah.
And I go with the science. I take all the emotions out of it. It looks like if it's going to be a viable vaccine, I do that. I take the H1N1 vaccine all the time.
Yeah. See, I've not had a vaccine really in my entire life. Maybe I had one when I was a little baby. I don't recall, quite frankly, Ron, but I'm a little skittish on the whole thing, quite frankly. I'm really probably 60-40, 60 not taking it, and 40 if I'm really convinced that I need this thing, I might look at it. That makes sense?
Yeah. And you know, Malcolm, one of the things that I do, as you know, and we'll talk about that today, but I do the statistics from CDC and NIJ all across the United States when I compare and contrast the intrusions upon, the imminent, risk, if there is an imminent risk. Mm-hmm. And so, my theme is, look, if I've got literally, 10 cases in my county of coronavirus and zero deaths, what am I doing walking around with a mask all the time?
Hold on. And then why take a vaccine? There's always a risk with
That's what I'm saying. Right. What's the need? Unless, in my case, I'm doing traveling all over across the country. So sure, I'm going to take a vaccine.
Right. Yeah. No, it's fair enough. Fair enough. I mean, it's all mitigation and what the risks are really there. Ava, what do you think about the vaccine? And also, you just mentioned here, coming on here about the antibodies, that there might be some other ideas even beside the vaccine.
Yes, I think sooner than a vaccine, we'll see this antibody. California pharmaceutical company claims coronavirus antibody breakthrough. This was on the Newswire this morning. And it's all about this antibody that they can inject in you. And what it does is it actually causes the virus to flush out of your system. It doesn't allow it to attach. So this is fascinating. The article is very, very well done. And it's right here in America, in California. There's a large pharmaceutical, biopharmaceutical company. I think this will be much sooner than the vaccine will. I think we'll have this kind of treatment. And what it will do is it will immunize you against the coronavirus.
That's it. Yeah. Listen, Ava, at the airports, you see the Wall Street Journal is reporting that the TSA is preparing to check passenger temperatures at the airports amid all of this stuff. So what's happening is here, in fact, I walked into a business the other day, Eva, you know, and they have those like little guns they put up to your head where they do your temperature, you know what I mean? From a foot or so away. Yeah. And the lady was doing that to my temperature, and I've really been avoiding the public scale because I don't want to get into this craziness that's out there. But I happened to go into this one and they required the temperature. And she sat there and the damn thing wouldn't work. And she kept fiddling with it and it wouldn't work. She came back again and I was getting so impatient. 3-4 minutes went by. She's trying to get this damn temp. I mean, come. I said to the lady, I said, come on, lady. I said, what's the problem here? I said, I don't have a temperature. Let's move it along. And she looked at me and said, well, I'm so sorry, sir. I'm just, I mean, come on. You know, now they're going to be doing that at the airport when you check in to get your travel. I mean,
air travel will be different. I think it will have to be different. And, you know, the sanitizing, the constant sanitizing, it's interesting because I listened to somebody speak about this the other day who traveled. There were only like 40 or 50 people on the airplane itself, so there was quite a bit of distance. But the sanitizing is amazing. I mean, it's...
That's a good thing, actually, because even just the general flu and things like this, you know, a lot of people carry germs around and they touch the doorknobs and the handles. You know what I'm talking about? Things like that, right?
It never failed. I always got sick when I flew. It just was, yeah.
You're susceptible to that with all the germs around and stuff. Yeah, I'm a bit of a germ phobe. I'm sort of like Trump in that way. So I don't like touching the doorknob. I'll use something else to touch it. I've always been that way.
That's
so
maybe, very wise. Very
probably
wise.
Why I don't get a lot of these diseases and flus and stuff, because I just don't trust what people have touched and where their hands have been. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So anyways, let's move it along here. Talking about that here. All right, so there's another story. This was interesting, and this was, listen to the headline on this. Now, it's loaded. Let me warn you all, it's loaded here. President Trump says he could kill someone on Fifth Avenue, but how about 50,000 across America? Well, this was just the lovingly beautiful publication called the Huffington Post. And they said here, and this is the real scandalous nature of media today, which really rips me up, people. Says Trump's failure to take early aggressive action, experts believe, has already caused tens of thousands of Americans to die from the coronavirus. Well, Trump once bragged he could get away with murdering someone in the middle of Fifth Avenue in Manhattan. And, you know, I want to say to you, it's not like any of us have never said something stupid in our lives. I mean, every single one of us have said stupid things. And sometimes it's even something you might even consider a joke, God forbid, and it's taken out of context. And then the media, in this case, it continues to remind people that, oh, the man actually said this. But can he get away with letting tens of thousands, the article went on to say, die of the coronavirus on main streets across America? It's just, you know, they're blaming this on the president. And there's so many headlines like this that are so egregious in your face here. You know, this is just part of that media narrative where they beat the drum and they just twist headlines and put stuff out there that is, you know, some people believe this stuff, though, Dennis. It's pretty sick, though, isn't it?
It is sick. It's pure jingoism, okay? Because back in February, the Huffington Post also criticized Donald Trump for being too aggressive by closing the border. Where did they get this stuff about these people being, thinking that the president has not done anything? They really haven't been looking at the record. They really haven't been seeing how proactive that the United States has been under the direction of the president. And they're in denial of all of this simply because they actually don't really know what's going on anymore.
Well, they maybe don't know what's going on, but they also go back to their ideology of the fact they don't want Trump in office. And so they make up stuff as they go. And the problem with this, Dennis, this is the real danger in all this stuff is this is over 90% of the media we're speaking about here. I mean, this is not a casual thing here or, a distant concept here. I mean, this is the mainstream of conversation here from the media that beat the drum. And Ron, I know this stuff rips you up because you get so infuriated with the media. And here's a classic case of that with the Post. Well, this here goes on, Ron, to say this. With the U.S. death toll likely to cross 100,000 before June, the cost in human lives of Trump's failure, his failure, to pay attention to his intelligence reports and take aggressive actions to curb the disease is already becoming clear. And you know, Ron, I am seeing this all over the place, and it has really irritated me because you're seeing this narrative be put out there, which is a totally bogus narrative. It was this president who did exactly the opposite of what they're saying.
No, and I completely agree. And, you know, one of the things as a person, again, is collecting statistics here and looking at the medical causes of death. Okay, so there's cause of death and manner of death. And what we're finding out, and even the physicians across the country, many physicians are getting very angry that medical examiners are listing cause of death as being COVID. Instead, you know, there's a difference between a person dying from COVID and a person that has COVID on board, but also died from pre-existing, you know, other diseases and maladies.
Oh, you know, hold on. Now, you bring up a really big point. So, Ron, what you just reminded me, that 100,000 I just said, right? That 100,000?
Right.
That could very well be like, that might even be 50,000 or less. I mean, I don't even know. That's because they're stacking the deck. There are so many reports of this. And even if somebody comes in with a sniffle, they're saying it's corona.
Well, you know, we have a medical forensic pathologist on our staff, and he suggests, based on the physicians he's talked with, that maybe 25% of these so-called COVID deaths are not COVID deaths at all. Right? They're not. They just had COVID antibodies in them, or they
25%. He's saying, huh?
Yeah, I'm thinking, and I think that's very correct. And I think that if you went to Dr. Fauci and you asked him, look, is there a difference between dying from COVID-19 or having COVID-19 on board and then dying? Is there a difference between that? He's going to say yes, and say, well, should you list that as a COVID death? That's the question that nobody's asked him yet in these press releases. I think that the progressive left, and even some on the other side, have got to inflate these COVID statistics because they have to try to justify all these draconian measures.
100%. Well, it goes right away with what you and I are going to talk about a little bit later with all this pandemic policing, Ron, that's happening, okay? Listen, talking about that, I want to ask you about Santa Ana, the police department there. They have announced that robberies increased by 50%. That's a hell of a jump because people are wearing those coverings, the face coverings here. And there was one story here where the gentleman that was owned a gas station, I believe it is. Here it is here. And he says that they're coming in, and they somebody came in that way. They just thought it was a mask they were wearing for the virus because everybody's wearing them. And I knew this was going to happen, Ron. And it says here, the guy says, it's horrible. I mean, I know we have to take certain measures because of what's happening with COVID-19, but it's the perfect script or manual for a robber, the mask, the sunshade, and a hoodie. You don't know who's coming, who's walking in, or who's leaving. This is a problem, Ron.
Well, you know, I have to tell you that when this just started, those of us in the law enforcement community, because we tend to be a bunch of cynical people sometimes, we say, oh my God, there goes reasonable suspicion and probable cause to detain somebody on the street right off the bat. Because now, you know, you could, in the old days, which was a couple of months ago, you could stop somebody for wearing a mask that was hanging out by a store, okay, and looking suspicious. Now everybody, including myself, looks suspicious. And of course, the robberies are going to go up because now they got a wonderful way to hide their face, and they don't look suspicious anymore on the street because even the cops are wearing masks, for God's sakes.
Yeah, yeah. There's something. It's so sinister but it just tells you people sometimes the plight of evil people, and you know, even in a situation like this, they will sink to any level to take advantage of the human race, and that's kind of what we're dealing with here, really, in so many ways in life. It's pretty sick and sad. I don't know. It just always reminds me of how low things can go. Speaking about how low things can go, Miss Ava Armstrong, have you seen the, oh, exactly. You see the, you know, and I'm speaking here of the Democrat establishment in their hero, Joe Biden. So he did a virtual roundtable here just the other day, and there were some pretty serious gaffes, and people are looking at each other, and everybody in the universe knows this man is not up to the challenge. The question now becomes, you know, when did they pull the plug out and do the switch? Because everybody believes that's going to have to happen. So he says in a virtual roundtable, Ava, he says, listen to this now. This was not a moment for excuses or deflections or blame game. Like, that is really being said by a Democrat presidential candidate. Okay, we'll go along with you, Joe. He says, we're in the middle of a pandemic that has cost us more than 85,000 jobs as of today and the lives of millions of people who died. Millions of people, millions of jobs. And he says, you know, we're in a position where we just got new unemployment insurance this morning. Numbers, 36.5 million claims since this crisis began. Ava, there's no part of that phrase or that quote or that couple of sentences there that make any logical sense at all. It is so bogus, the information he delivered.
I don't know how they can prop this guy up and keep him going. There was one clip that I saw where they played a video and he started talking to the video. So, I don't know how the left-wing media can cover for this guy much longer.
Talking to the video, you mean? Yeah. I've done that some days when
it's
when I put my hand on my lip and I go blah 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 blah. You know, that's when I do that, Ava. But anyways, another very big story that has really got my eyes open, and I want everyone to pay attention to this. And this is the Justice Department and the state attorneys generals are likely to bring an antitrust lawsuit against Google. Now, this is a big deal, people. And, we're talking now Google and Alphabet Inc., which is the parent company of Google, by the way, that all of you that follow that know that. So they're moving towards bringing a case as soon as this summer, at least some of the state attorneys generals. This is being led by Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton, by the way. And much of the state's investigation has focused on Google's two things here, Dennis. There's the online advertising business, because Google they monopolized all of that, you know, all those little Google ads you see on all the sites and, you know, and it's ad buy and they're all Google and they've kind of, it's a monopoly. It's an AT&T kind of thing. But even more than that, the other big problem is the search engines. And this is the really one that's got me. We're talking here about the dominant search business to stifle competition. Now, there has already been so many confirmed reports of this happening with Google. They should have been stopped years ago from this because this is how they did the election with Obama. It's how they did Trump. They worked against him in 2016, 2015. And Google, which is a far-left organization and the Alphabet people, they've obviously twisted the card deck here. And here we are. So now there are two things we're looking at going after, the search engine manipulation and the ad business. What do you think about this?
There's definitely a problem with the structure of that entire system at this point. There has been a consolidation of that market ever since the 1990s when Google appeared. There used to be more of these kinds of companies. There are really none left to challenge them until you get to, you know, China and places like Alibaba and stuff like that. But you don't see that kind of stuff in the US. So the problem here for Google is they are kind of in a monopoly situation. I think they're going to have to break some of this stuff up. The Google search engine and being so closely tied with another Alphabet property called DoubleClick, which is what runs the ads. Yep. And, you know, so they work hand in hand and basically there's no room for anybody else to get their message in. So it's cut off, not just the conservative side of the world, but it's cut off unfavored, sin industries, so to speak, that are unable to get their fair time on these systems.
And we're talking competition here. I mean, we're talking fair competition.
Yeah. So,
and there is
so, There is none at this point. So somewhere along the way, the antitrust system is going to have to go to work and basically say, we got to put this back together.
A.G. Barr, Ron, he says they've devoted considerable resources to this Google probe. Listen to this, and continues to treat it as a top priority. So he told the Wall Street Journal here that he wanted the Justice Department to make a final call this summer. He's moving on a fast track here, he says. He says, I'm hoping that we bring it to fruition early summer. He said, and by fruition, I mean decision time. So Barr knows, Ron, how serious this is. And I get that from his statements and his quotes. And it looks like he wants to do something about it.
I am absolutely in agreement with where Barr's going. And my thing has always been, because I've been personally affected by this. I have a firearms training business and out in California, and Google has continuously squashed it. Mm-hmm. And they control everything with regards to sales, you know, with people's clicks. And I've made numerous complaints, and I always get the same response. Well, it's algorithms, and we don't have it. We can't do anything about it. Well, of course they can, because they're programmers, they're coders. And so I think where Bard needs to come from, at least to help small business people like myself, is to, number one, get some oversight over these large companies so that First Amendment protections, not only business protections, but First Amendment protections are there, you know? I mean, and for everybody, it serves everybody. Yeah, yeah. Google can't control the narrative. Yeah.
And they are doing that. No, that's you right there is the soundbite. Google control the narrative. And because they're doing that with the manipulation of the searches you're doing out there. Because if they're only going to give you their view in the searches and they cut everything Correct. Else off, we're in trouble in every kind of conversation we're going to have in this country. And I have to tell you, Ron, just about everybody relies on Google for their searches. And there are others out there. There are other, but nothing is far along as Google is. Listen, one other thing here about the super duper missile you've been hearing, the Space Force. Dennis, this here project, I know you're looking at this. The president came out and he touted this project as 17 times faster than is currently on the market. They call it the super duper missile. And the president, who I got to tell you, it's like a kid in a candy store when it comes to these kinds of things. It really is, because you can see how excited he gets. Yeah, they got 3 times. They got 5 times. We have 17 times faster, he said. And we're going to blow them all out of the water. But in a real sense, he said, we're building right now incredible military equipment, the president said on a serious note, at a level that nobody's ever seen. We have no choice. We have to do it with the adversaries we have out there. Now, I got to tell you, Dennis, the president is correct with that statement, isn't he?
Yes, he is. And basically, what the president was really announcing to the world is that the United States is not standing still. There has been an accusation particularly among the defense community the defense pundit community in D.C., that we weren't moving forward, and they were getting worried that Russia and China were moving forward with their technology advances. And it's just not true. The U.S. has always had these kinds of programs going. And by reorganizing everything under the Space Force umbrella, we're able to show where that stuff is and really start to track the fact that we are investing in these weapon systems to stay with the things that are happening by the other powers that we need to worry about in terms of overall strategic deterrence. And I think it's a good thing.
Well, Dennis, the Air Force shifted $15.5 billion to the Space Force, by the way, that is already being appropriated for these kinds of activities. I think the Space Force is going to be something very unique another 10 years down the road, and certainly 20 years from now. And it is certainly a force of the military whose time has come. So anybody who laughed about that, well, I got news for you. Just ahead here, you'll see the laugh was on you, because there's a lot to why we have to control space, people, and what's happening in the world here. Okay, so here's where we're at here. Very interesting article op-ed on the platform here today, as you hear us on Viewpoint this Sunday. And it's entitled, Pandemic Policing: The Rise of National Socialism in America. And it gets into a lot of the things we've been talking about in past days and stuff, friends, about the overreach of these, the mayors, the governors, the county commissioners, the people at the local level who seem to have taken on this power. And the cases we're seeing, they're so in your face. And they're so obvious, people, what's happening here. I mean, it's not a joke. And it really is a national socialism sort of movement here. So, Ron, you wrote the piece here. Dr. Ron Martinelli wrote the article. And it's not a laughing matter. It's not a joke. You, with your career in law enforcement and working in this field here, you've been quite offended by the overreach and the out of control, in fact, to the security of our civil liberties and our freedom here. Tell us what's going on.
Well, you did a really great introduction to the problem. People keep, and politicians keep putting out, you know, these edicts and orders as if they're laws, and they're non-legislated edicts and orders. And so they're not laws whatsoever. And it's very questionable as to anything that these governors do is even enforceable. And you're already seeing many of the courts, you know, tossing these things aside and saying, look, governor, look, Mr. Mayor, look, you know, county commissioner, you can't be doing these things. You know, I'm going to keep it very simple. The Supreme Court and lower court decisions are fairly unanimous in saying that whenever you are putting out edicts and orders and even laws, you balance the governmental need, which means in civilian terms, you know, what is the seriousness of this and what is the imminent jeopardy to others? And you balance that against the intrusion upon the individual. The intrusion are, you know, these draconian orders and edicts, and they have to balance. In other words, the courts demand that if you're dealing with First and Fourth Amendment issues, like detention, seizures, closing businesses, arresting people, uses of force, those law enforcement actions or the actions of governments have to be satisfied by an objective or real demonstration of need. And so what we're finding in all of the things, the examples that I talked about, and I hope people will read that article on the platform, we're finding medically, statistically insignificant COVID numbers.
So here's what Dr. Ron says next. Statistically, your chances of contracting the C-19 virus in Ector County, he says, and almost all these places it's like this, is 0.00050 of 1% and 0.00024 or 1%. And the point is, you probably have a better chance of winning the lottery or getting struck with lightning, Ron, maybe, huh?
Oh, absolutely. As a matter of fact, much better chance of getting struck with lightning than contracting wow. or dying from COVID-19. Wow. Yet they arrested a business owner, arrested patrons at a store. You know, I mean, you name it. They're going out and even uses of force. In Ector County, they brought up a SWAT vehicle filled with uniformed officers brandishing automatic weapons on a bar owner.
See, listen to this. Listen to this, how crazy this is.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean,
we're not trying to, and here's the thing, people. This conversation, we're not trying to be smug here or suggest, and I'm not either, I mean, trying to suggest that COVID doesn't exist. And nobody is doing that. And right along, we've been saying it's an overreach. And right away, we've been saying the lockdown was crazy. And here we are, and you take a look at the stats of this one area. You can multiply this all over the country, Ron, right? I mean, it's the same story everywhere.
Absolutely.
So the pandemic policing, the rise of national socialism in America. It's a great read, but that's the kind of work that we're doing here. And I want you to go read that on AmericaOutloud.com. I'm going to tell you right now, there's some very interesting things up there. There's another great article I want you to go read from Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. Will America Survive as the Last Great Hope for Mankind? It is a must read because it gets into the generation, the new generations, and why they see socialism as an attractive choice. Don't rule out the possibilities here, people. You got to open your mind to what's going on. There's another amazing one from Dr. Baruch Plettner. Must read. Noncompliance and government resentment are the true American values. I have to tell you, folks, when I read this piece, I make no mistake when I say this to you. When I finished the last paragraph, I had a tear in my eye. That's how that article impacted me. You talked about American values and why we're patriots here. Read that article and see if that doesn't happen to you at the end of that one, please. There are some amazing reads on the platform. Go and get them out there and let people know liberty is at stake here. And there are people battling for that on the front lines. Okay, so now that we've got that done here, I have to tell you, we have an amazing two-part program coming up on Monday and Tuesday on The Voice of a Nation. And this is really something. You need to take these 2 hours out of your life and you need to listen. And you need to listen with an open ear and an open mind. The program is entitled, Is the American Melting Pot Coming to an End? It is an unbelievable two-part series. This Monday and Tuesday, you will hear that on America Out Loud Talk Radio. The panel of people on this show is incredible. It is IQ Al Razzulli is on the show here. Dr. Baruch Plettner and our very own Ava Armstrong are on this program. And it is really such engaging conversation. It will make you think, and it will make you, well, make you possibly cry as well. Hopefully you'll have some optimism, but at the end you'll know that we are at risk here. We're at great risk for what's happening in our country. But let's listen to this excerpt of the program, and then we'll talk about it. But nobody would be able to maintain their culture. In your opinion, as a man who studies all of this, what's your sense of that when you hear those fertility rate numbers, Baruch, and where we're at in Western society?
If you think that every child would be healthy and survive into adulthood and so on, then two people, a man and a wife, a husband and a wife, if they had two children, they would simply replace themselves. But in reality, even today, unfortunately, there are children that do not survive into adulthood. And so on average, you need a little more, 2.11, for example. That same number, for example, 100 years ago, was probably closer to 5. Now, another point is more societal and psychological. Normally, you would expect that people want to propagate themselves. In other words, if people feel that they have something of value culturally, historically, then they want to bestow that. It's like a precious gift. It's like when you have gold, diamonds, a successful business, a farm, an apartment building. You want to bestow that on your on the next generation. That's a very human instinct. So when you have something of value, you everybody knows that they're going to die, so you kind of hate for that to just go to naught, and kind of disappear when you die. You want to transfer it to that next generation. And in order to transfer it to the next generation, you have to have the next generation, right?
Here's the argument I want to give back, though. But if these people assimilate with the American culture, and if the American melting pot is a melting pot, why do we care?
Well, we care when people do not follow our legal system, for one thing. I mean, if you're going to follow Sharia law and live in a no-go zone, where police can't go in, or now we have Sharia police in Dearborn, Michigan. We have police that police Sharia law. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we're not becoming America anymore by doing that. We have laws in this country. We have customs. And if people cannot assimilate, in other words, follow our laws, follow our customs, they can still embrace some of their customs as well. But it needs to be a mixture. And America's laws need to come first.
IQ, what's your answer to society now for these next 30 years, between now and 2050? What do we do?
First of all, I agree completely with Ava, which I have done it on many radio talk shows, that the education of the child starts with the parents. Because the building brick of a nation is the family. And when the family is corrupt, the whole nation is corrupt. So the education should be taken over by the family. And if the education in the school and the higher schools and the universities, they pay $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 to keep their child, the parents should go and change it because they pay the money. Ava is 100% correct. The future, if you're telling me, look back when in 2050, there will be no future in 2050 to look back. You won't have any. Definitely, the melting pot is increasing. And Ava, the statistics are correct. The white race will be a minority. That's not a bad thing. It's not a catastrophe. It's not a good thing, but it's not a catastrophe. What will be a catastrophe if Islam takes over, not everybody else.
So you listen there to the excerpts there from our distinguished panel. This two-part series is entitled, Is the American Melting Pot Coming to an End? It's a very interesting program. And again, featuring IQ Al Razzulli, Baruch Plettner,
and Ava Armstrong. And Ava, who's with me now, Ava, you being involved in that two-part series, which really was quite unique in doing it with the guys here, what's the takeaway for listeners and why should they listen in?
Well, I learned a lot in doing research for this show. And I also learned a lot from Dr. Plantner and from Al Razzouli. I think this will be one of the most eye-opening shows that you've done, Malcolm. I think people will just be stunned. They will learn a lot as far as, you know, demographics go and statistics. But it will really raise eyebrows. So hats off to you for doing that.
Yeah, it was an important topic. And a lot of this came from a very interesting article that IQ had written for the program, for the network, The Demographic Triumph of Islam Over Christianity. Very edgy piece. But, you know, the most important thing, people, is it makes you think. And we have to think as a people. We have to get outside of our boxes and our comfort zones. And we have to consider the alternatives and the options if we're going to have a shot at this and do this properly. There's a lot against us here. We're talking about, again, the force of good and evil here. And so this two-part series, I'm very proud of the fact that we brought together some really fascinated minds and we're able to deliver a very unique conversation. So you'll hear that on Monday and Tuesday on America Out Loud Talk Radio Network. 6 p.m. Eastern Time is the first airing. You'll hear that now, okay? And there is an encore at 10 p.m. Eastern Time later that evening. You can also hear another round of that. So I hope you'll tune in and listen with an open ear and an open mind to learn more about the American melting pot and what we're concerned with and what the future holds for all of us there. So very, very important conversation there. Well, listen, up next, you heard about that horrific shooting in Georgia. People are claiming racism and got an interesting panel discussion coming up on that next. I think you'll find most intriguing there. Stay right there, folks, as Viewpoint continues.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. As we celebrate our four-year anniversary, thank you for making it all possible. Well, shouldn't news deliver truth and inspire us to reach higher? With blogs, podcasts, video, and 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We are the vision of the voices, America Out Loud Talk Radio. So you have been hearing about this story coming out of Georgia. And it was a young man, a 25-year-old black man, Ahmaud Arbery. And so as the story goes, he was seen running down the street, jogging, what have you. He crosses in front of a truck again, as you hear the story unfold here, two white men. You always know where the story is going when you start referencing, well, this is a black man, this is a white man, this is a, you know where this is going, people, right? So in front of a truck with two white men holding guns and a struggle ensues. Three gunshots are fired. Arbery begins to run away and falls to the ground. He is shot and killed, and there's a bit of a cover up after, and there's a lot to the story. And I want to talk about that next, people, because there are some real lessons in this story with Ahmaud Arbery. And I want to do that next with Ilana Friedman. Ilana is a veteran intelligence analyst, political commentator, and host here on America Out Loud. Ron Edwards is here. Ron is a columnist, talk show host, and Ron's voice you hear every day on a 90-second feature. It's called The Edwards Notebook, and it's a great voice here. Lieutenant Joseph Pangaro, a retired police lieutenant, director of school security, host of Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network. We got the right people to have a real conversation about this story so you can understand what's happened here. Now, there are some interesting feedback and comments coming in, whether racism plays into the story or not. Some people are offended by it. Some people are. Some people are not. Ilana wrote a very interesting op-ed on the platform that was called The Real Racism Exposed in Georgia. I'd like to start there with Ilana.
Well, what we heard, Malcolm, from the beginning, what we heard was that he was jogging, and these two white men, father and son, who were in this truck, saw him, and they said something about there had been robberies in the neighborhood, and they wanted to, they thought he was the robber, and they were going to apprehend him. It turns out that they have been given license to do that by the sheriff's department. That came out, I just read that this morning. But the what they actually did was to stop him, force him to stop. The son ran in front of him, and he was holding a shotgun.
They were trying to do a citizen's arrest, is what I understood, right?
That's what they said. Yeah, that's what they said, a citizen's arrest. What they were trying to do and what they accomplished, which was to kill him, it was a punishment that certainly did not fit the crime. And it seems to me that there's a lot more behind the story, and there is more coming out about it every day, it seems.
Was there even a crime here?
Well, that's the question. There was at the place where he was shot, there was a house under construction. Mm-hmm. And they are saying that they saw him go into the house. They say they saw a light, a flashlight or something in the house. Right. This is a story that wasn't told before. In fact, initially, when they told their story, the sheriff told them, I think it was the sheriff, but one of the law enforcement people said that this may have been the district attorney who said this was a justified homicide. Those were his words.
That's what the DA said there locally. Yeah. So let me tell you what I have on that, Jelana. Surveillance video. They have surveillance video that was recorded minutes before the killing of Ahmad there. And it shows that, you know, he just stopped through there, that property, for less than 3 minutes, engaged in no illegal activity whatsoever, they said. And he didn't take anything from the construction site. He just stopped there, whatever. He remained for a brief period of time, and then he left, and that was it. Went down the road, and these people took matters into their own hands. So the question is it worth shooting a man and killing him to death, Ilana, right?
Well, there's actually another small piece to this, and that is, you know, this is a man who was jogging, and Georgia is warm. They had faucets on this house, and it is suggested that he went in to get some water to drink so he could continue his jog. It is certainly not reason to shoot a man to death. And the whole story sounds a little bit manufactured to me.
All right, now, you believe that race played a part of this, Ilana. Let me get right to the crux of this so you can help me here. But you believe, and you talk about in the op-ed, and people can read that op-ed right on the platform there, but you talk about the fact of having lived and been associated with what you call the Deep South. You believe that racism is alive and well there. You give examples. People can go read it for themselves. But the point is, you play that out in the piece here, and you believe race maybe had a part to play into this thing. Is that correct?
Yes, it is correct. Although I need to qualify that, because as more information comes out and more testimony comes out, we may find the story takes a different turn. But with all the evidence that we have so far, it would seem to me very believable that these two guys who were given license, the father was a former investigator for the sheriff's department, so he was given license to bring people in. I don't know how that works, but in the South, you don't need much of an excuse. I mean, if you're, this is a small little, it's not hardly a town. It's just a way stop in Georgia, near the coast. And I have to tell you that race, you know, the term racism has been way overused.
Racism, that is so out of context, because the left uses it, very casually. They're very cavalier about that word. And it has been weaponized, the word racism, in America. And I'm sad to say that to you. So when there are real cases of racism where somebody has that, and it's hard sometimes, the lines get very blurred, people, as to where it is or where it isn't. Let me give you an example here before I bring on Ron Edwards here to talk about this well. And Ron's in a unique place. Both Ron and Lieutenant Joe will be in a very unique position in moments to talk about this as well, because Ron Edwards is an excellent black conservative American. He can speak from understanding growing up. I mean, I can't speak as a young black man growing up. Ron can. Lieutenant Joe can speak as a law enforcement guy. I can't. I'm not in law enforcement. So that's how you do the story here. You get the people who know about it. But let me read you from the Twitter feed when I put that op-ed out that Ilana had written. I would have shot him before he threw the punch, is what this person said. And then actually, Ilana responded back to that and said, no, he fought to save his life, but lost it anyway. It was a lynching, and there is no excuse for it. And she goes, you know, his real crime was jogging while black, and he was murdered in broad daylight. Now, that's, again, a pretty big statement there. And as Ilana said, there's still stuff coming out, so we have to see. Another gentleman says, there are other videos that expose the real truth of what happened. McMichael stood at the side of the road, gun in a sling. Arbery ran across the road and attacked him. Self-defense, not racism. You know, it gets, and you'll love this, Ron, this one here is the one you'll really want to talk about here. And this person says, Tish says, the race card is played out. Wake up. Why is it you never post how a white guy or Mexicans getting killed by cops? You are how racism starts. You're the very seed of evil, and you need help. And we need help. It's we the people, not we the blacks, whites, Mexicans, Americans first. All right, this is what this one reader wrote on social media, Ron. And Ron, that would be my position more or less. Let me just tell you so listeners know. My position is I, for one, am tired of the race card in this country. And this is where this person says as well, and she's right, this person says, we the people, not we the blacks, we the whites, we the Mexicans, and so on and so forth. So we get some interesting comments from readers and listeners out there. What do you say, Ron Edwards?
Well, I agree that the race card has been overused and it should be replaced by the principal card. And the reason why I say that is because many murders in this country go unchecked, uncared about by society because, you know, everyone is waiting on one hand to go, racist, racist, racist. But look at the tons of blacks that are killed every weekend by other blacks. And nothing. There's not a freaking word. Now, when it comes to this shooting in Georgia, if whatever the motive is, if it is true that this guy, you know, they're lying and saying that it was self-defense and it really wasn't, and they just went and just got this guy and killed him. You know what? Bottom line, I don't care if it's racism or not. I'm looking at the principle of the matter. Those guys should be forced to forfeit their own lives for the crime. And I think it's more important to get back to the focus of punishing people for their crimes, because whether it's in Michigan, Illinois, and all these liberal states, you can bump people off left and right, and you can be out of prison in less than 20 years if you're black. Bump off, you know, it's like a disease running around. And so let's get back to principle. And Malcolm, you are so correct. The racism, the racist card has been overused. It should be thrown away. I've been in the Deep South. I even did a big speaking tour through the Deep South in 14, met wonderful Americans, and whether it's in Huntsville, Alabama, places in Georgia, and throughout the Southland and the East Coast. And for the most part, those people were nicer than many people in the North. You have these fake people that want to attack racism, and the most of the people that are doing that are on the left, and they themselves are actual racists.
Oh, totally.
The proof of this is, look at the policies the leftists impose upon Black Americans, and look at how they're living as a result of that. That's the real racism that's going on.
Ron, I want to read you a couple other things here. Listen to this, Ron. Another reader wrote here, and this one here, his name is Black Cat Soda. So this must be, I assume this is a Black American here. I don't know. But here's the comment they said, Ron. Let's stop saying that people are just taking pot shots at blacks. Could blacks stop invading our homes, please? Trespassing, robbing citizens. People are getting sick and tired of their foolishness. That's what one person, which kind of plays to what you just said, Ron.
Yeah, because look, the two people that tried to murder me were not whites, they were blacks. And wow. One was a black Muslim who didn't like something that I said, which was based on truth. And the other one was another guy that was breaking into my mother's house, and I happened to catch him, and I ended up putting him into hospital. The guy was armed with a gun, and God knows what would have happened had I not showed up. So please, I'm racist out.
Well, that's it.
We got to get back to principle now.
Yeah, yeah. No, no, I love it. I love that you say that. You're so practical. I mean, you really give me so much hope, Ron. And Ron, a lot of the comments we're seeing, people are offended by race. Another lady, Lady Maga, says, it was white guys doing a citizen's arrest with a shotgun on a black man who had committed a felony. Now, she's already got this guy committing a felony, by the way, okay? This is where information...
She's out of her rocker.
She's out of her rocker. That's right. That's why I say that to you. The shooting occurred after the felon went after the white dude. At that point, there was self-defense. Video footage and witnesses corroborate this. Stop race baiting Jim Crow. Again, everybody's got an opinion here, you know? Another person says, Ron, I love these comments because they really showcase how screwed up we are in race in America here, you know? Ron, let me keep you right there with the mic caught, and I want to bring in Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. What do you say about this? And from a law enforcement standpoint, and this one lady calling it a felony, what about those two guys? Did they have a right to kill and shoot him dead?
I'm going to say no, because I'll tell you right now, even if at best case scenario, this young man, Mr. Arbery, was out jogging and he stopped and he looked at a house under construction, something I know lots of people have done. Take a look, right? Let's go see what's going on. What's the interior going to look like? Whatever. Best case scenario, he was out there jogging and he went through through a house and he didn't do anything. Worst case scenario, he was going to go in and steal something and he decided he saw somebody and he wanted to take off. Either one, that is not something that you get shot and killed for. Number two, when I'm looking at these two guys, okay, Ilana was saying that maybe the father, who used to be in law enforcement, had some kind of law enforcement powers. Well, did he announce himself? Hey, I am Sheriff Jones, or I am Investigator Jones, and I represent this community. Did he show a badge? Did he do anything? Because when you see that confrontation, being an investigator for a long time, you can't just look at the initial report or the initial look at a video unless you have the entire thing.
Right.
Because what happens is it can go back and forth. All right. If Mr. Arbery saw them and saw that they had a weapon and they were aggressive to him, his only chance is to fight for his life or run. And maybe he thought he couldn't outrun a gun. So he decided to fight these guys to try and get the gun away.
Which any reasonable person would do, okay, no matter what color you are or whatever it is, yeah. And, you know, this whole construction site thing, you know, I mentioned the other day, Ron, to you, and you had said to me off mic, you had said, hey, you know, he shouldn't have stopped by the construction site anyways. And I heard that in my ears, and I knew you had said that. But then I asked you back, but that's not enough for him. He shouldn't have paid with his life. And you agreed with that, right? Is that correct what I say there, Ron?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like I said, if the situation is as it is so far portrayed, I think the guys should pay for with their own lives. I mean, it's real simple to figure out. We can throw race out of it. Let's stick to principle. They did a crime. They've got to pay the time or give up their time.
Yeah, whatever it is, right? Interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
What I have to say to you, Ilana, stopping by a construction site, listen, any one of us on the call here have done that. I mean, I would be out jogging, and I would have stopped by something this year. I mean, that's an innocent thing on any particular day. I mean, no, the problem is balancing that with somebody who's trying to steal something or do something that is wrong, but that doesn't give the neighbor the right to shoot me dead and take my life, Ilana.
No, Malcolm, it certainly doesn't. And in this case, I have to confess that I've done that myself. Because we're full of curiosity, and if there's nobody around and you're not doing any harm, it's probably not the right thing to do. But, you know, many of us have done that. And it is certainly not something that you should be paying with your life. And, you know, having lived in the South for as long as I did and seen the underbelly of this really ugly side of humanity, I can't help but think that there was a racial factor in this, and it played a very big part, in spite of the fact that you know, as you both said, the term is way overused and it's misused.
Yeah.
It's used against religion. It's used against
it is.
All
it is
kinds
indeed.
Of things. I think But I don't think that that means that we should ignore it completely, because racism does exist. One person for another because of the color of his or her skin, that is unacceptable. It's disgusting.
Well, which you showcased very well in the article. I mean, you put that out there, and I love your passion when you talk about it. It's in the op-ed again, people. You can go read the op-ed in its full glory there on AmericaOutloud.com. The Real Racism Exposed in Georgia. Let me also suggest to you that you go ahead and you read Ron Edwards' columns. Their edicts are unconstitutional. I know. I reread our Constitution. Ron puts it out there every week. Friends, I thank you as always for being with me and being here and part of the mission to save America. It's time to get involved and get loud.